Once again, good morning, East Point family. My name is Josh. I'm the director of groups and classes here at East Point. Once again, I hope you guys had a great Christmas yesterday. And to our British and Canadian brethren, let me be the first to wish you a happy Boxing Day. Now, things are looking a little different today. As I mentioned before, we are starting a new series next week called It's Complicated. But I brought some friends in to kind of talk about...
Sorry.
Morning, Josh.
Good morning. Yeah, good morning.
Did you hear that?
Sorry. I did. It was a little loud.
Yeah, sorry.
But nonetheless, more appreciated.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
I was going to say thanks for having us, but... Yeah.
It's my show.
You're already here.
Yeah. Oh, so you're interviewing us this morning.
Apparently.
Okay.
All right, so, let's get to it.
Yeah, so we got Keenan and Josh here joining us to talk about relationships, because as the resident single man on the staff, I need some help in this realm, clearly.
So, yeah. I don't know if you want to take advice from us, but...
But I just thought we'd come in and have a nice lively discussion in preparation for our relationship series called It's Complicated. Mm. And as I was kind of prepping for this, I was thinking back to the very beginning of the Bible in Genesis 2:18, where Adam's by himself with God in the Garden of Eden, and God said that it is not good for man to be alone. Mm. And I've always found that fascinating, that Adam and God were walking in perfect union with each other, mm-hmm. and that wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. That was the first thing that wasn't good, mm. was Adam by himself with God.
That's
and so just that idea of the importance of relationships and community and being together, and mm-hmm. I think this sermon series we're about to hit upon is just so necessary, mm-hmm. especially after everything we've been through the past 18 months, and not to get on the whole COVID train, but you know, it's affected the way we've viewed relationships. It's mm. affected the way we engage in relationships. And so I think diving into it this time around is just going to be super crucial. So because of the fall of mankind, we've kind of complicated relationships a bit, mm. one could say. Mm-hmm. But that's where a relationship with Jesus just comes so much into play. And our relationship with Jesus is the most important relationship we will ever have. Mm-hmm. And when that's front and center, that uncomplicates a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But make sure not to complicate that one, because mm-hmm. That can be dicey mm-hmm. at best. Yeah. And so kind of to start, I just wanted to ask you guys, how has your relationship with Jesus influenced the other relationships in your life? Mm.
I guess I can start if you got to finish your tea this morning, Josh.
Hey, you know what? Don't make fun of my tea. I mean, it's not as good as coffee, but my blood pressure's down. So well, my doctor's thanking me. So continue.
Cheers.
So we when we look at it, at our walk with Jesus, I think so many of us, kind of to your point, we can look exclusively at, well, it's just me and God. Mm-hmm. It's just me and Jesus. We're doing good. Mm-hmm. Things are well. And then we can almost separate our walk with the Lord and then the rest of our relationships mm-hmm. in our life. And for me, I did that early on, even through kind of my early 20s of just, I had this engagement with the church, more of a religiousness. And mm-hmm. then my other relationships, my friendships, the way mm-hmm. I engaged people was more self-serving mm-hmm. for me. And it even came down to my relationship with my now wife, Ashley, then, mm-hmm. that it was very much, these relationships are meant to serve me. Mm-hmm. But then as I got right with the Lord and really understood through the scriptures and through just wise counsel and seeking him in prayer, it completely reoriented my mind on that Jesus came to serve me. Like mm. the gospel became real in my life. Mm-hmm. And then I had to reckon with, well, if the gospel becomes real in my life and my relationship with Jesus, then it plays out also my relationship with other people. Mm-hmm. And you just go back to the two greatest commandments, right? Love the Lord your God with everything you have. And then in the same way, love those around you, yeah. love your neighbor as yourself. And so it really had to reorient, and it took time, but mm-hmm. It started with Ashley and I at the time. We weren't married. We had to really reorganize some things in our relationship to honor the Lord. Practically, that looked like honoring him with our intimacy, honoring him in a way that says we're gonna stay away from that, because mm-hmm. that wasn't going to be something that we could build our relationship upon. But it also looked like reconciling with friends mm-hmm. or to be honest, staying away from certain relationships mm-hmm. that completely took me off of my walk with Jesus. And so really it was so foundational in my early walk with him to really reconcile my relationships around being in communion with Jesus. And it's still, it's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. It's constantly looking at how are the health of my relationships today in comparison to my health and my relationship with Jesus.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you talked about how when you grew deeper with Jesus, mm-hmm. that kind of forced you to reevaluate some of your other relationships and maybe cut Absolutely. Ties with people.
Yeah.
And what was that like for you? Because I think some of us have this idea, like once we really get into relationship with Jesus, mm-hmm. everything's going to be like easier, happier, all that rainbows and unicorns. Yeah. But like following Jesus can be really hard. Mm-hmm. And if he's calling us to cut ties
Sure.
with some people who might be leading us away from Jesus, that's not something that's fun or easy or bright and sunny.
That's right. And when we reckon with his command to be not of the world, but to be in the world, mm-hmm. I think that plays out a lot in our relationships. And what relationships are just, at the very end of the day, the anchor that is still being of the world, right? Mm-hmm. That's pulling you into the culture, pulling you into those things that we know are not honoring the God. And be able to cut those ties. And I say cut those ties, it's way easier than you think.
Oh, yeah.
Because most often those relationships don't have a whole lot of depth to them. They might have a lot of frequency to them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They don't have a whole lot of depth. Yeah, so when you say, hey, I'm just not going to engage, I'm not going to maybe reach out or text so much, you'd be very, very rarely are people saying, hey, where have you gone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're often going to cause the same kind of turmoil maybe in other mm-hmm. people's lives. But the others that I've had... as I've distanced myself, they may step further onto the territory of the kingdom of God, mm-hmm. right? In the ways of where maybe I was getting drawn into the carousing, the partying, mm-hmm. the not God honoring conversations at the very least, right? Mm-hmm. Just the pollution in our minds, talking about the things that are not of God. When we start removing ourselves from that, friendships can actually start stepping onto the territory of the kingdom where, mm-hmm. their own relationships or their own career path or they might run into turmoil in their life. Now they seek your counsel. Mm-hmm. And that's been a really powerful thing to see, not because I'm enlightened, but because if I'm following Jesus, they see that there's a different way. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many times as Ashley and I have stepped further and further into walking with Jesus together, people that don't know him seek counsel. Mm. For godliness, even when they can't put their finger on it. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully we're able to provide that. But it gives us a bit of a hedge of protection around our walk with him.
Mm-hmm. That's
because
awesome.
Those relationships pull us away from him.
Yeah. And I think something you hit on, you talked about how some of these people that you step away from, there's frequency but no depth. Mm-hmm. And I think that can play out in our walk with God too sometimes, mm-hmm. where
That's right.
we're with God a lot and we're frequently like, meeting with him, but the depth just isn't there. Mm. And I feel like it's part of a progression that we're supposed to go through with any relationship, because you're never going to dive off the deep end instantly.
That's right.
Maybe in a rare instance, but you have to just keep going deeper and deeper and mine the riches of scripture and God's word. But Josh, what about you? Like, how has your relationship with Jesus influenced some of your relationships as a father, as a friend, as a husband?
Yeah, very similar. And when you said like the frequency and no depth, I was like, oh yeah, 2020. because like there was so much pollution on like social media and the news and what's going on in the world that it was like hard. Like I'd meet with them, but it's like my mind's elsewhere, mm-hmm. you know, and it was me not coming fully to the table with them, you know?
Yeah.
But I had the same similar path where like my friends that I had started to fall away. But it wasn't, you know, I didn't hang out with them as much. I didn't text them as much. But they mm-hmm. also weren't reaching out, like you said, because we were both chasing, both all my friends were chasing status. We're chasing mm-hmm. different things, you know. And so when I started chasing Jesus, like for real, that's when those shifts started happening, mm-hmm. you know. And what I've realized, too, is when I don't invite Jesus into the friendship, like then that's when it just starts going downhill.
Yeah.
You know, even in my marriage, like when we're just having, like I was telling you just the other day, like we were having a disagreement on something and we just stepped back and we said, okay, let's invite Jesus into the center of this disagreement mm-hmm. and give it 5 minutes. And we came back and it was like, oh, like we had empathy for each other's sides mm-hmm. on this and we were able to solve it. But it was like having to take that step back. Yeah. Normally it's her. That tells me it's like, why don't we just invite Jesus back into this? Oh yeah, that's right. You know, but though, so I think that just always being in step with him inviting him into those relationships and into the conflicts.
No,
and
I love that.
To the complications.
He's the ultimate reconciler.
Mm. Yes. Well, he's peace. I mean, his presence is peace. He brings peace to everywhere he goes. Like I was saying, you know, the when he showed up in John and he says, "Peace be with you." Again, I say, "Peace be with you." Like he's talking about his presence is with him. And so when we're in his presence, we have peace. It's not just a feeling. It's the presence of God that brings peace. And, you know, we say peace on earth.
Yeah.
You know, because Jesus was on earth in the season. So, you know, I think that's when we're in, just in his presence, we're able to obtain peace in like the craziest things going around us.
I love that.
You know, like Paul in a jail cell.
Yeah.
You know.
That's right.
So, and that peace tends to uncomplicate things.
Absolutely.
Well, it does. Yeah. And I just to bring this into early on in the conversation to abiding, right, as we enter a series called It's Complicated, and we desire for the one that can make it uncomplicated to enter, it's all about abiding. And I think as we roll into a new year, if our pursuit is abiding in all of our relationships and everything we do, that is the very, I mean, just in in John 15, even just verse 1 and through verse 5 say that he says, "I am the true vine." This is Jesus speaking. "I am the true vine and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. Already you are clean because of the word that I've spoken to you. Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing." Mm. And I just think that scripture is the very foundation of our relationship with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And if we're not seeking an abiding relationship, his presence, where his peace flows, then our relationships will be complicated.
Yeah.
They will remain complicated.
Yeah.
So I just think that's just an important thing for me to recognize as I'm entering relationships with family, friends, my wife, my children. Am I entering the relationship out of a place of abiding or out of a place of my own understanding and my own
world? Yeah.
And,
I heard this great analogy once that, like, an apple tree doesn't strive to produce fruit.
That's right.
Because it's obedient to the process. Mm. And likewise, when we're obedient to the process of abiding, like, we won't have to strive and we don't have to complicate things. Like, it's going to work itself out.
Yeah. Okay, but, Gandhi.
Jeez. I don't know about that. But so kind of shifting gears, because one of our messages we're going to be talking about is parenting, and you both are parents. And Josh, Scott kind of talked about this a couple weeks ago, just mentioning the great celebration of the adoption of Logan, and you know, he's been in your family since he was 4 days old, and then it came official about a month ago, I think. But kind of, that's kind of a unique process, I imagine, because you have two wonderful kids already, Eli and Emmy, and I know you love them dearly, and then Logan comes into the picture. What was that kind of like, where you you met him and you took him in 4 days after he was born? So you know, he spent all but 4 days of his life with you guys. And I mean, if you look at him and you didn't know he was adopted, you'd be like, yep, he's a 40-year-old.
Yeah.
Like 100%. Yeah.
Mostly through his actions. But
but kind of like, what was that process like for you and Beth in fostering and then adopting, where, you know, he's not flesh and blood, but he's your kid. He's your child. What was that kind of like?
Yeah, well, I think what this process has taught me is that they're not my kids and they're God's. Like, we're all children of God. Like, I get to raise them and do the best, but we're all created in the image of God, and they're his children, and we get the privilege to raise them and pay for college. So I wish, as long as he helps out with that, then
you've started a new fund, right, this year?
Yeah,
we have to. anybody interested, we can
please do.
We'll get you the link. Actually, it's a shared Eaton Fournier fund.
We have a lot of staff kids that will need to go. I'm just like, you know, let's just do trade school. I mean, HVAC, and you're like going to school and making money.
That's right.
You just gotta start an East Point College fund.
There we go. Well, anyway, to answer your question, Beth always wanted to be a foster mom. She grew up with that in her family. Her aunt was one, and my mom was adopted as well. So that it's always kind of been in my family. And so when we got married, that was kind of the thing that we wanted to do when our kids got old enough. And so we got licensed, and then went on vacation. We came back, and we got a call the day we got back from vacation for Logan, who was 4 days old, and there was a baby in the NICU, born preemie. Born addicted, and he's 4 days old. And we said, "Is it a boy or a girl?" Because Logan could go either way. And they said, "We don't know." And he said, "All right, You know, wow. So yeah, we just showed up in the hospital, and I was actually DJing a wedding that night for a friend, and I don't DJ, so don't ask. It was terrible, but I mean, it went well. The wedding was fun. But, yeah, no. Pew, 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 pew. So so anyway, we went to the hospital that night, and he was you know, withdrawing, and I got to meet him and just hold him, and I remember just praying over him that night, and like he was like, you know, kind of shaky. And the next day, we got back in the morning. He was there for 2 weeks. Like the shakes were gone, and like it was just kind of miraculous how God just like touched him in that moment. And it was just like this moment of like peace with all the craziness, you know, like of what this is going to mean and, you know, uncertainties of everything. But that was really just powerful. So yeah, we brought him home. And the thing for us is that the phrase that we used a lot was we learned how to love unconditionally with a guarded heart, which is like an oxymoron, you know.
Of course.
We gave him every bit of our heart, you know, from the get-go, but also like guarded our hearts in the knowing that like there's a possibility that he's going to go home. And because we've had biological children, that was kind of the goal, you know, is to help his parents be free from addiction and other things. We love them dearly. Mm-hmm. They're doing well right now, and we still are in touch with them, and you know, still bring them over to see him. Like there's no legal obligation, but we still bring them to see Logan and have that relationship. He calls him mom and dad, you know, my mother, mom, my other dad, he says. But our hardest days were when they failed, you know, in this whole process, because we just like grew to love them, you know? And so learning how to like love unconditionally with a guarded heart was very interesting in this process. And again, they're not our kids too, you know, like we're all God's children, you know, we're all going to be in heaven together. And so, it's been a really fun process, hard process. Some of the biggest victories in that our friends saw were like some of like the hardest days, like when they terminated the parental rights.
Yeah.
Like being in a courtroom when your rights get terminated.
Yeah.
It's like, sorry, that's the hardest thing I've ever experienced. And everybody's celebrating around us. But we just refused to celebrate somebody else's failure.
Yeah.
You know, and that was like our big thing, that we just want to honor them well and love them well. And then after it kind of started seeping in, like, okay, this is going to be, like, we can have them forever, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. No, and I think that's so indicative of your guys' heart and just the foundation that your kids are going to have, because that's your heartbeat.
Yeah. They love them so well. Like
But even your heart posture towards, you know, you said, the hardest day was when they lost parental rights.
Yeah.
And I remember walking into your office and you were in tears about that. And, you know, everyone else is celebrating because it's like, oh yeah, you guys are going to get like, it's going to be final. But for you and Beth, that was a time of mourning.
And we were celebrating too. It was like, it's weird. Like I said, after we left the courthouse, I was like, why do I feel so hollow? Yeah. Like I thought I'd be excited, but it was like,
but I think that attitude for your kids and for them to witness that, is because your heart's broke for other people, even though it was joyous for you and a great outcome for you guys. The other side of that is devastating.
Yeah.
And so for your kids to witness that and see you guys process that and walk through that with them and the Lord, like they're going to remember that for the rest of their lives. That's a foundational thing for them. Thanks for sharing and being vulnerable in that, because I know, you know, you guys definitely have a unique perspective, and obviously you're not the only foster parents or adoptive parents, but these are stories we don't always get to hear about. Like, we hear about the celebrations, we hear about the great upbringings and like reunions and everything, but you know, to hear you guys get vulnerable about that is special.
And like you said, we're not the only ones in the church that have done this and that we've heard from, and we've seen heartbreak on others that, you know, like we mourn with them too. And this is just our story, you know, like this is just one story. There's so many different, you know, things out there. But what this process in terms of relationships have taught me, the biggest one was to see people first and not addiction and not describe them as drug addicts or like alcoholics or whatever. But it's like they have a name. They're a person first. And so that stuff is secondary, you know, same, you know, so like humanity, bringing humanity back into our title first before anything else.
It's huge.
It's huge.
Well, and I think if we look at how God's designed us as humans, that's the leading edge of what relationship is, right? If our humanity's stripped, if our dignity's gone, then there's no motivation for a relationship. But by you guys actively pursuing that, you desired, you desired and you succeeded, and you still do, in stepping into what would be a complicated relationship and uncomplicating it with the gospel. So often we say, well, it's going to be too hard. It's going to be too much work. But Jesus did the work for us and we're able to follow him into these areas that, I mean, at the end of the day, God's design, and we'll get into this, I'm sure, in the weeks to come, but the design that God has for the building block of society, his people, is relationship.
And you
look at it through the scriptures in Genesis, it was all about relationship and perfect relationship with him. We broke that. But then Jesus comes in and completely pulls together a cleanup crew called the church to be able to restore the building blocks of society and relationships and families. And I think it's huge because so many of us that do church, so many of us that follow Jesus, we look at opportunities within the churches, these moments to engage and enjoy and revel in, but then we don't walk away and say, hey, that was meant to be fuel for my fire to lead my own family. And that's one thing that I'm learning with raising Hadley now, who's going to be 2 in February, and then Jack is... Yeah, Jack's really misbehaving as an 8-week-old. We've had some really hard conversations. But even this morning, just looking at him as he looks up into my eyes, I don't think he realized why he was smiling, but he was smiling. There was an innate thing within him to start exercising these muscles of smiling, and guess what? It makes me smile. Yeah. Even 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this little created being who has an inner wiring to smile and enjoy life. And I'm smiling at him. But then also our brokenness leads us to sin as well. And so you've got this reconciling with our children who are God's ultimately to step into their lives and help them walk away from the sin that is in this world and step into that innate joy that comes in Jesus. And I think when we look at parenting, when we look at it's our role as parents. It is not the church's role. It is our role as parents to disciple our children, to raise them up in the ways of the Lord. And not lean on another organization, maybe the school, the community, the church even, to do that.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I'm learning in my own heart. Parenting is different than leading in the church. Totally different.
Yeah.
And sometimes when they cross paths, it's not a good end of the story. So
That's good. And Keenan, that's kind of a good segue to what I was gonna ask you, but you just mentioned Hadley's 2, Jack's 8 weeks. So you've become a father times 2 in a relatively short amount of time.
You want to make it complicated? Yeah. I have 2 kids under 2 during a pandemic.
Yeah.
But it's been some of the sweetest moments in
I bet that's a lot of people's stories, by the way.
It's been some of the sweetest times for Ashley and I in our marriage, and it's also been some of the most challenging times.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we come back to the same spot that you and Beth have arrived at recently too, and just saying, we need to invite the Lord into this. And it doesn't look like these holy moments. It looks like putting our own, we can either hold a can of gasoline in our hand or a jug of water. And it's whatever one we choose to use is gonna keep the fire burning or put the fire out. And you know, when we invite the Lord in, that's putting water on the fire. And it's even more amplified when it's 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
and babies are up screaming and doing their thing, but it also brings me to the reality that, like, Jesus had to do the work for this. Because in my own flesh, and my own desires, I'm gonna be angry, I'm gonna be burned out, but if I lean on him and I'm in an abiding relationship with him, it tempers a lot of that.
You see
the fruit that comes from just patience and endurance and perseverance and all those things that we can chalk up as things to learn later in life. Well, God leads us through these seasons so we can develop inside of our character. And it's not easy. So Ashley and I had to do a lot of hard work early on in our marriage that I thank God we did. And there were hard conversations, hard lessons to learn. Invited a lot of people that are beyond us in age into these conversations because we couldn't figure it out. And finding mentors and people to really coach us and be vulnerable with helped us sort a lot of things out so we could be prepared to be in this season, though we didn't know it was coming. And but it's been so sweet. It's the joy of being able to come home every night to know that my 2-year-old daughter's going to run to the door with just fresh excitement. Just puts anything that's happened earlier in the day just completely wipes it away. So the joy of being a father is it's a blast, but it's a challenge. Right?
It is, yeah.
And Ashley the other day said, "Man, I'm starting to realize it's never going to get easier. It's mm-hmm. just always going to look different.
Mm-hmm.
And wow. and her words were, this is why I think contentment is so important.
Mm.
That yeah. we're never going to solve anything, but you can uncomplicate your relationships and find contentment mm-hmm. no matter what the challenges are. So
that's good.
I'm going to start calling you a prophet because you answered the question yeah. before I asked it.
Look at that.
Oh, no.
I never actually asked a question, but you answered it.
Yeah.
Look at that.
So.
Yeah. One thing that you said, too, is that you surrounded yourself with mentors and people that are older than you. And like, that was one of the things Beth and I did too, is like jump in a life group that had like 50-year-olds. Like, some of my best friends are 50-year-olds and, you know, I'm 34, you know, because like they've been through everything that I'm going through pretty much. And they've just got so much like wisdom. Like, I can read every book about parenting and gain all the knowledge I want. But until I like talk to somebody who's been through it, then I'm going to gain wisdom, you know?
That's right.
So like just jumping in, like you said, that was the biggest thing for me to like,
yeah,
understand parenting. And then also like, hey, your kids are awesome. What did you do? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it yeah. doesn't just happen. You know, like there's intentionality behind yeah. everything, you know, so.
And that's a good point, because I think that transitions us nicely, because, you know, Paul, in his letter to Timothy, talks about how older men should be teaching younger men.
Yeah.
Older women should be teaching younger women, and just the importance of the generations and generational learning and stuff. And I heard this great quote from a pastor once who said, when the generations are working correctly, each one will be stronger than the next, because the one that's coming before will be lifting the next one on its shoulders. And it's kind of that idea of like the older generation's ceiling is the floor upon which the next generation stands upon.
Cool picture.
And, you know, you talking about getting wisdom from people who are older than you as you entered fatherhood. And, you know, I'm taking the opportunity now to gain wisdom from people who are metaphorically older than me when it comes to relationships. And so it's just
dating 101.
Great imagery right now.
That's funny.
And Josh, you kind of touched upon it, and maybe you want to expound upon it, but the question is to both of you, how important is it to have close relationships with people from other generations?
I mean, I feel like I kind of already answered that, but I think it's just having that mentor, you know, kind of figure. I was at a conference one time and they said, find yourself a Timothy, find yourself a Barnabas and a Paul, you know, so somebody that's like in ministry running beside you. And then somebody that's like encouraging, like your cheerleader behind you and checking in. And then a Paul that's like always just pouring into you, challenging you, making sure, like keep you accountable.
Yeah.
Like the one thing that we don't want in life, I think, is accountability, but that's the one thing we're starving for, you know, like, I mean, I haven't done great at diets cause I haven't found somebody to keep me accountable to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but I think having those three people in your life that can do all those things is essential.
It's huge.
So,
yeah.
Well, for me personally, it was recognizing that there are so many limitations within me, individually that I'm going to be stuck in a rut.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm going to be so limited in my ability to love my wife well, to love my children well, to love within the church well, if I don't invite other people into my life. And I think that's what Paul's sharing with Timothy, is saying, hey, you know, because he also talks about don't let people look down upon you because you're young.
Yeah.
But I think they will if you don't invite them into relationship, if you won't help encourage them to be the spiritual fathers they are.
Yeah.
So good. I never thought of that.
Well, I've experienced it, and I'll just share a brief story. I was at a conference where it was actually hosted at my uncle's church, right? Mm-hmm. They flew in all these young pastors, and there was a leadership round table where a lot of the younger leaders were able to get some direct question and answering from the speakers for that conference. And so they all had really great ideas on leadership and development and even to the ends of preaching. But the main speaker kind of sat back and didn't say much. And then when they said, well, what do you think? And he said, everybody turn around and look to the back of the room. And when we did, there stood my uncle, about 60 years old, been leading the church for 20 plus years. And he said, the challenge with this generation is that they think they can figure out leadership in and of themselves. Mm. He said, that man right there and the men of that generation are wanting to pour out all of their experience and wisdom into your lives, but you will never ask them. He said, that's the ceiling to your leadership potential is tapping into those generations and standing on their shoulders, not pridefully, but to say there's a compounding here in the church that we miss so often because we think we've got it figured out, or we think we're too busy, or we think, well, if we're to be truly completely transformed by the renewing of our mind that Paul says that we have to actually renew our mind.
Yeah.
We have to be constantly thinking in different ways and inviting other people to speak into it, first through the scriptures. I mean, there's nothing better in terms of wisdom and counsel than the holy word of God, right? The Bible. But when we see that applied in the lives of godly men, we get to see the steps that are taken to be able to start. And they're not perfect, but man, this is so much easier to learn from somebody else's mistakes or wins than to do them yourself.
That's why I have an older brother. Just watch him make the mistakes.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm the good kid.
That's why I have YouTube.
But I'll say there's been, I can look back and this, again, this isn't, I'm not trying to be prideful or say I figured it out right, because I've made so many mistakes in just the short years that I've lived. But I can see points where men that I've taken, I've heeded the wisdom of some men in my life that have saved me from ruining my marriage.
Yeah.
Saved me from ruining or just crumbling the foundation upon which I can now parent, right? And if I hadn't taken their wisdom or actually taken a check in my own life and had some accountability where I didn't only hear the wisdom, but they followed up to see if I was putting it in place.
Huge.
I don't know where I'd be today.
Yes.
And I don't know where my marriage would be. I don't know where my parenting would be. And it's a constant pursuit of those relationships that are so important.
Yeah. And something I was just thinking of, like you mentioned it earlier, Josh, where you talked about how you could read every book, but like on parenting, but you had the wisdom of others and kind of like, I like to read a lot. And, you know, so people are asking me for book recommendations and especially around leadership, like people always want to like learn more about leadership. And I've kind of shifted my approach to that because you have these books that talk about leadership principles, but then you have biographies of people who actually did that.
Yeah.
And like you guys mentioned, failed at it, learned from it. Like I read one on George Washington this year that was unbelievable because he's widely regarded as one of the best generals of all time. That man lost more battles than he won. And
he just won the right ones.
Yeah.
That's important.
But it's learning from generations, like you said. And, you know, for me, that looks a little differently with that. But, you know, just having that relationship with older people, gleaning wisdom from them. And it's just so important. And that's what God calls us to do. And, you know, we can't, as younger people in this room, we can't be so arrogant to think that we have it all figured out.
Yeah. Well, and I'll just say this, is it comes to mind, and I'm still wrestling through this personally, but I recently heard the whole idea of most of us pursue the laundry list of achievements that we desire at the end of our lives, right? And that's common. We want to make this position in the company. We want to have these things when we retire. We want to have this balance in our retirement, in our banking accounts, in our 401ks or whatever. And then the pivot for me was when somebody said, "Forget all that. What do you want your kids to say about you at your funeral?"
Yeah.
And when I think about that, and when Hadley and Jack, and if we ever have any more kids, stand to talk about their dad, not when the church stands to talk about their pastor, not when an employer goes to talk about their employee, but what about my kids? What will they say about me? That changes my priorities. And I hope it changes a lot of our priorities in the church to say, that's my pursuit.
Yeah.
Because no one ever is going to say, man, he works so many hours. What a good guy. But your children will, in their heart, say, I wish he hadn't worked so much because I never got to know him fully. Right. Yeah. So there's that reconciling that I think the quicker we can get to it in our relationships, especially, we realize that's where the investment needs to be made.
Yeah.
Not in these other things that our culture say are so important. And that's in Romans 12, verse 1, where Paul says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. This culture is going to sweep us up into its priorities. And if we're swept up into it, we could be 20 years down the line, down through the cultural jet stream, and realize what happened.
You hear it often.
It starts with our relationships.
And no, that something you said about, you know, at your funeral, what do you want people saying? And I just remember at my dad's funeral a couple of years ago, one of his best friends on the fire department, my dad was 30 years on the fire department, gets up and, you know, has a great talk about my dad, but there's something that was profound that he said. He's like, you know, both Danny's kids are pastors and, you know, Dan did the same work as his kids. He just wasn't holding a Bible. He was holding a hose and a fire axe.
Yeah,
I remember that. Like,
I remember that.
That was profound. And that's honestly like kind of changed the trajectory of how I view the importance of investment in people and relationships because it was just like, that's what I want at the end of my life is that's not to be recognized for, like you said, how many hours I've worked or how many books I've read. It's the people and like how God has used me other people in my life to grow me and stuff. And so I think that's just a great reminder.
And we all desire for Jesus to say, well done, good and faithful servant. You may enter your rest, right? And I feel like Jesus is standing behind our children. You know what I mean? And saying they're gonna talk about the details of what that well done, good and faithful servant looks like if we're walking with him.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I got to get on it then.
I got to call my wife after this.
I got to get some work done.
Well, I'll let you guys get to that. Just thank you guys for joining us. Thank you guys for...
Yeah,
pleasure. Josh, you're kind of making your Sunday morning debut.
Well, out this side of a drum set.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Yeah. You know, usually we see you on the drums or strumming the guitar.
Well, and I want to say this, that we can preach a sermon from a platform all day long, right? That's not worth even a tenth of what it looks like to live out a sermon in the ways of your family, right? The sermon never preaches truly until we live it out. Yes. And you guys have done that without ever having to grab a pulpit or a microphone from the platform. But the sermon that Jesus truly desires to preach in my mind is the lives that we live in front of a watching world. So thanks for doing
that. Yeah, same. Yeah. Thanks, man.
So thank you guys for joining us.
Yeah.
We are back in the building next week, January 2nd at 9 and 11. We are starting our series called It's Complicated, and I hope that you join us for that. Hope you guys have a great new year, and we will see you here next week.